Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. In 2002, Quebec developed Canada's first poverty reduction strategy. Since then, some provinces, territories, and the federal government have followed suit with plans of their own. Now, in 2023, as Canada is faced with a new set of poverty and food insecurity challenges, Food Banks Canada is introducing the country's first comprehensive poverty report to capture the nuances of provincial, territorial, and federal perspectives in one place. The poverty report and corresponding report cards are accompanied by a set of policy recommendations for each level of government, which act as a roadmap to steer the country toward a future where poverty and food insecurity are a thing of the past. Next week, I'll be speaking with the Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, Minister Sheila Malcolmson, about her office's plans to secure funding and legislation for British Columbians struggling to afford to live. But as the weather turns colder in the north, I reached out to community service providers in Prince Rupert and Smithers to talk about taking care of our most vulnerable population as the season changes to fall-winter. Lara Neeson is the Community Ministries Director for the Skeena-Bugley Valley Circuit of the Salvation Army, and Captain Jeff Butt manages the Prince Rupert Salvation Army and as well is the Prince Rupert Community Services Director. They're on the news today to talk about the growing issue around food security in each of their locations, as well as how they're working to serve the needs of their clients in this uncertain time.
Captain Jeff Budd, I'm with the Salvation Army in Prince Rupert, and I'm also the executive director for our community services, which includes the food bank.
Oh, can you describe the Prince Rupert Food Bank? Like, as insofar as like location, capacity, maybe even how many staff and how many volunteers you have there?
Sure. We have here at our main building on 25 Granville Court, next to the senior center, we have four staff members, including myself, and we have two regular volunteers that help out in the kitchen because we do food services, like we do meals, breakfast and lunch, 5 days a week.
That's quite a bit of operations. What other programs do you offer?
Well, that's a bit of a challenge for us right now is programming, but I actually have a meeting coming up next week about some programming that we're looking to do. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to currently the programming we have emergency services, like the RCMP uses us when there's personal disasters or situations that require that we could help out with, because we also run a thrift store here in Prince Rupert. So we're able to do vouchers in that, say if people lost things in fires and that we're able to help out, or people are new to the country, or, you know, those sorts of things, emergencies like that. It's not a regular thing that people use to receive items. We use the store profits from the store to help pay for things here, but we do that breakfast and lunch meals, you know, Monday through Friday. And we also have the food bank here, which does emergency food hampers, we call them. And that's usually scheduled through appointments. So just to help out with the offset cost of our food needs. Plus, we also have our church that we operate here as well. So that's kind of everything that we do here in Prince Rupert.
In comparison to other times in your experience at the Salvation Army in Prince Rupert, how busy do you feel like you are? And by that, I mean people coming in for those hot meals at breakfast and lunch, people needing food hampers. Has there been an uptick in people needing to use those services?
There absolutely has been in this year. I have been, not just here in Prince Rupert, but I have been working with the Salvation Army for close to 10, 12 years now in my capacity as the officer, but also in other capacities dealing with our needs that we meet. There's definitely an uptick, certainly a shift. We know that food pricing is, you know, out of control, and that we've seen just this year alone so far, I've seen an increase of about 25%. I'm a bit of an analysis junkie at heart. So I like to crunch numbers and that. So it's about 25% increase in this year alone, which creates kind of a double problem, because the food donations and money that we receive for the food bank has decreased by about half so far, as we get into now prepping for Christmas, because we also do come Christmas time, not only extra food for people because, you know, it's Christmas time, but also we do toys for kids. We do toys for about 800 kids in the area every year. And that has been kind of halved so far. Now, it's still early. It's only October, but I'm getting a little nervous, let's say.
And when you said about that 25% increase, do you mean since last year or since you began 10 years ago?
No, since last year here alone in Prince Rupert. Yeah.
So
that's a 25 increase from 22 to 23. Yeah.
So far. Yeah. I guess it's kind of anecdotal, but you're also involved in community services. So aside from the rising grocery costs, the price of food, what else do you attribute to this rise in people needing the services?
Yeah, I've given that a lot of thought and, you know, looked at different things. I mean, lots of times you'll have groups or you'd see on the news where people are saying that, you know, this is a contributing factor. It's like, well, I could have told you that ages ago because, you know, that's where I live. This is my everyday. But certainly what I've seen and is a very disturbing trend is what we would say are working poor. There was a time not too long ago, like I go back in my years in this field, there was a time when you could work a job full-time, part-time. You're not going to be wealthy, but you're going to be able to get by. But I certainly see a lot of people come in my doors who what we call working poor. There are people who are not homeless, it's not addiction issues. It's people that, despite them putting in years somewhere, the wages of what they make plus the cost of living for their rent or their mortgages, they need any help they can get. They get groceries. I have lots of times on occasion encounter people who are upset. They come in emotional because they would say, you know, for years I supported you guys and I can't believe I'm in the place now where I need to come in and get help from you. I've always helped you and now I need to get help. And it's just, they're emotional about it. And I usually just try to put back to them like some sense of comfort to say, you know, unfortunately, you're not the only person in the situation. That's not the first time I've heard that story.
Yeah.
So I'm not an economist. That's not my background. I'm not one who understands these problems. My role is to help alleviate some of the stress of this through food insecurities in my role here in Prince Rupert. And certainly when it comes to food services like food banks or soup kitchens like we have here, certainly the stigma that it's for people who are homeless, unemployed, that sort of thing. But that's not the case. And that's why it's important to have these conversations and help shed some light on and inform people about the truth of the matter. Think about people who are on a disability income. Think about people who are on seniors' incomes, these fixed incomes. They haven't reflected the cost of living, the cost of groceries for them. Things like gas going up, things of, you know, their rent or their mortgages or the cost of groceries. People that are still on fixed incomes, it hasn't really reflected the change. So if you go back to when food banks began as kind of a regular staple, I mean, you're talking about the Jean Chrétien years, it was, you know, broadcasted as a temporary measure during, you know, harder economic times. But you go from British Columbia to Newfoundland, you will find food banks still existing. And I would wager, not that I'm in a conversation with people in, say, Ontario who are running a food bank other than the one like I do at the Salvation Army, I'm sure they see an increase as well. It's not that it was a temporary measure. It has become a regular fixture in a country that's considered to be one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Mm-hmm. Yet food insecurity is a real problem that needs real attention today.
As a faith-based organization, you feel like there's almost maybe people don't want to donate as much to a Christian organization.
Certainly the idea is somehow that we're, you know, making it some sort of mandate, or that we are promoting our religion through food services is again a myth. We don't do that. It's simply our motivation behind why we do what we do. It's part of our faith is to give back to our community, the same as it would be for people of the Sikh faith or people who are Muslim. But I know for us as faith-based, it is a hurdle. And we understand, like for me here in Prince Rupert, I understand that people would be worried about giving to us and it being their money being used in some sort of promotion of religion, but that's not really the case. It's more about our faith, or our faith background is really what is our motivation, I guess, mm-hmm. our modus operandi, but it's not, we don't use faith as a, we don't use the food services as a promotional tool to proselytize to people and try to convert people. That's not the case at all. It's just simply our motivation and our background, really.
Mm-hmm. How do you respond to busier times and holidays in your location?
Well, it's October, but we are already in full swing for Christmas just because of the volume that we have to undertake. Like I said, there's four employees in this building still having to do all of our regular food banks and meals that we do and everything else. But then we add the Christmas things to it as well. So all of our Christmas fundraising that we try to do and being able to provide toys to kids and extra food for folks around Christmas. So yeah, it is a big undertaking. That's why we start as early as we do. I'm a little nervous this year, kind of hoping for a Christmas miracle where, some group is going to do a fundraiser for us and I have had some of those, certainly this time of year. It's also important to remember that we don't just feed people at Thanksgiving and Christmas and holidays like that. We do this all year round, every week of the year.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a challenge there too. That's why it's so important that when people do donate to us, like with a check or something to that effect, for one, it 100% stays in this area. It's not any donation that goes to overseas or any of those things. Those are separate giving opportunities that we have. But when people write on their check to the food bank, Salvation Army Food Bank, 100% of that goes in our bank account marked for food. And it helps gets us through months like April and May and June and these sorts of things when the shelves start to getting pretty bare.
Yeah. Does your branch have the authority to apply for funding from federal or provincial grants, such as the recently released Critical Food Infrastructure Fund?
Yeah, we would be able to apply to, say, that Critical Infrastructure Fund, although we've recently had a great donation and from the City of Prince Rupert and from the Port Authority and other groups where we've been able to update and modernize our food storage and all new equipment for our kitchen. So we're able to do meals better and in better capacity and safer as well. So, the updating that, it's a wonderful grant that they have there for the infrastructure, which certainly is needed. I'm sure there's other food banks across the province that are probably celebrating the ability to do that. But for us in Prince Rupert, we're pretty up to date. We've just finished our construction project that's taken over the last, well, basically over COVID times, that we were able to update and modernize our building here to be able to serve Prince Rupert better. But usually the biggest thing is coming up with funds and support for actual food on the plate. It's nice to have the new dishwasher and the new dishes, but we need something to put on those dishes.
Mm-hmm. Is there something that you want people to understand about the Salvation Army that you think people maybe don't know, or if there's something that you wish more people would understand, what would that be?
I think it'd be important for people to know that the Salvation Army has had a long history here in Prince Rupert. It's been here well over 100 years, providing not just spiritual as a church supports, but also community supports with our feeding. And like I said, about how we help people, not just homeless or battling addiction or mental health issues, but just anyone that's needing a meal. We provided last year enough meals to feed every man, woman, and child in Prince Rupert and Port Ed, next community over, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's how many meals we provided to our community last year. So if we disappeared for whatever reason from Prince Rupert, there would be a huge, huge hole to fill when it comes to providing meals for people in Rupert. You'd be surprised who comes through our doors, and you'd be surprised how few people feel like we get, you know, money or grants all the time, or, you know, people's tax dollars come to us to help do this. We can't do this without community involvement. And I think it's important for people to know that the Salvation Army is here. We want to be here. We want to be able to continue doing what we're doing, but that we certainly need support, continued support from our community groups and our local donors. Any donations to us, whether it's, if it's food or a check, that's always great to bring here to 25 Granville Court in Prince Rupert during the week, Monday to Friday. Typical working hours, it's good to do that. It's not always a guarantee there's someone here. I mean, like I said, there's only 4 employees for everything that we do here. So sometimes you might show up at the building and or call and there's no one here, but certainly, you know, placing a call to us at our number or sending an email, because we have a website and all that, people can give that way. We do tax receipts if your name is on the check and all that sort of good stuff. But yeah, that's typically how people can help us. And you know, we even have some local farmers that, you know, when they have a little extra from a crop, they bring it by and for a gift in kind, or people bring by fish and things like that. If it was like through the seas through DFO or something like that, we take that sort of thing. The important thing to remember is that we're not just giving out scraps. We give out food for people. If you're not willing to eat it yourself, don't ask anyone else to be eating it.
Yeah.
Sort of idea. It's a dignity thing as well. I understand people feel like their dignity might be upset or challenged by coming to us, but we don't see it that way. We actually see it as like with our slogan, like we're giving hope today. Mm-hmm. It's not about just planning for the future or celebrating the past of things we've done. We want to be able to make a change today. And we just look for support in those ways throughout the year.
Yeah. Just specifically about your toy drive, are you looking for people to donate toys, or is money still the best thing that you would, and then you buy those toys?
Yeah, that would be what would happen. Is people can bring toys, because lots of people feel that, you know, it's better that they physically gave us, you know, a doll or a set, Lego set or something like that to go to a kid in need. But it also goes a long way for, you know, financially giving to us for Christmas. And like I said, it's earmarked. And certainly in years like this year, where we're starting out a little leaner, in the past, people that have given money for that were able to dig into that because of the lean year.
Right.
So it's helpful in that way. Certainly with like finances, it's something that can sit in the bank and we can use it when we need to. And let me tell you, as a father of two teenagers, I miss those days of having kids that I could, you know, play Santa Claus for. So certainly in my role with this, I enjoy when I have, you know, X number of dollars that has been given and I get to go to the store and play Santa and pick up this for this one and this for this child, because their parents have let us know what they're into and what they like. And I'd be, ooh, this would be really great for this kid and that. So certainly money is always needed and we can put it aside for the needs in the future, like this year where it's a little leaner, but we always take donations of new toys at our location.
Well, thank you so much for giving me all this time today to help shed some light on the operations of the Prince Rupert Salvation Army.
Yeah, no problem. Great. It was great to have the opportunity to let everyone know what we're doing.
My name is Lara Neeson. I'm the new Community Ministries Director for the Salvation Army in the Skeena-Bulkley Circuit. So there's five communities. There's Houston, Smithers, Hazleton, and also Sikida and Gitsagukla.
Okay.
But we have three food banks in Hazleton, Houston, and Smithers.
Okay.
Can you tell me about some of the operations in those different food banks?
Yeah, so in Houston, we're only open on Tuesdays and Thursdays currently for food bank and also for coffee drop-in. Our goal within the next month is to open up again from Monday through Friday for coffee from 10 to 12. Just basically due to staff, we have to kind of work with our staff that we have. In Smithers here, we have soup kitchen on Wednesdays and Fridays from 10 till 1. And on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, we have drop-in from 10 till 2.
Did you start at the beginning of this year or end of last year?
Actually, I started around Christmas time last year.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess it might be tough to judge, but have you noticed an uptick in people using the services here since you began?
Yeah, so both in Smithers and in Houston, there's been a huge increase. So for Smithers, when I first started back in November of last year, we'd get around 20 to 30 people coming in on our soup days. Now it's about 80 to 100 people per soup kitchen day. So that's a huge increase for Smithers. And in Houston as well, because we've had our mill closed down, we've had a huge increase in our food hampers. And also our school hampers have gone up in Houston as well.
How about staff retention and volunteer retention? Are you finding that you have enough people to serve it?
Just like a lot of other businesses after COVID, we were very short on staff. Mm-hmm. And so we're just building up our base of staff and volunteers right now. And we're currently actively looking for more volunteers in both locations of Houston and Smithers.
Do you notice, or from conversations that you have with people, what are you finding is maybe some of the causes of insecurity around food and being able to have enough food for people that are coming here?
Well, definitely the cost of food is rising. And the situation with our living, finding a place to live in Houston and Smithers is hard as well. A lot of the clients that are in Tent City in Smithers have been relocated from Houston for some different reasons, like getting kicked out of their house from lack of money. Mm-hmm. So that is a huge aspect. But also I'd like to say a positive note on this. We do have a new cook here in Smithers that has been delivering some wonderful meals, and I do believe that draws people in as well. We have a long-term vision where we want to have more events to draw the community in. And it's a huge aspect to get people more aware of the type of people who come here and what people need. But on the short-term end, just to get people to come in to say hi, sit down and have a coffee. You don't have to be on the streets to come in for a bowl of soup. Mm-hmm. Just to come in and see how things are run and see the feel of the Salvation Army. Because our intentions is to bring people together and to have a safe space.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a couple of events coming up with the times yet to be.
Okay, yeah.
In Houston, it will be Cram the Cruiser, and in Smithers, it will be Santa's Breakfast. Please come by the building. We will be putting up posters for sure. We're still working on our website because we've had a lot of staff changes. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you very much.
And I'd like to finish off today's news with a little bit of good news. Lyle Pova is a musician and marathon runner, though it'd be tough to say which he identifies with more strongly. Lyle and his support team are raising funds for the BC Children's Hospital by running from Victoria, BC up to Northern BC and back again. He just completed his tour through Smithers and will be in Fraser Lake, Vanderhoof, and Prince George by next Saturday. It began on September 10th and will finish on November 21st. This tour is a two-part odyssey. It's called The Drum Run. And the drum part will be hosted in 25 cities, where Lyle stops running, kicks off his shoes, and hosts indoor drum circles. The run part, of course, is a 1,500-kilometer journey that Lyle, also an endurance athlete and marathoner, is currently running. The goal is to raise $100,000, and if you would like to learn more and support Lyle's cause, you can go to drumrun.org. Now here's my conversation with Lyle and his brother Errol, part of his support team, as they were in a bit of a rest mode yesterday on October 16th.
I'm Lyle Pova, and I'm the founder of the Drum Run Adventure Tour.
Can you tell me what Drum Run is all about and what inspired you to start it?
Yes, for sure. So Drum Run is a fundraiser for BC Children's Hospital, and it brings together two of my personal passions, which is, two of them are drumming and running. And then to bring in BC Children's Hospital, where I've worked for one day a week for 32 years, just seemed like a perfect marriage of those three things, the drumming, the running, and a fundraiser for BC Children's Hospital. And by the way, the benefactor of all the funds we raise is the Child Life Department. And, you know, just they do so much, but just in a few words, they provide all the resources for kids to be kids.
Could you describe where you started, how long this run is, and maybe when you started this leg? Because I believe you came through Smithers last week. So if you could kind of just describe where you are on your tour.
Yes, exactly. So we started in Victoria, and the Drum Run Adventure Tour is a four-leg tour, which involves Vancouver Island, the Highway of Tears, where we're at now, the Okanagan, and then the Lower Mainland. So basically Vancouver Island, drum circles in six communities, and I, Lyle, run between each of those communities and then facilitate the drum circles. So we went on Vancouver Island from Victoria, Duncan, Nanaimo, Qualicum Beach, Courtney Comox, and Campbell River, caught the ferry. Now we're on the Highway of Tears, Prince Rupert, Terrace, Hazelton, Smithers, Burns Lake, Fraser Lake, Vanderhoof, Prince George.
Yeah.
So we continue the tour, and our next drum circle is actually in Burns Lake. So we had a great circle in Smithers. I have really got to know some of the people and the businesses here in Smithers. So much so that we're considering a Drum Run 2.0 to maybe do this again next year.
And having a drum circle as part of this tour is definitely unique. How do you think that it changes the experience for people?
So drum circles are fairly unique, as you're mentioning, and many people have not participated in a drum circle. The magic of a drum circle is that it's all about, well, the drum, and it's about building community. So people, even though they might think that they're, you know, incapable or not very skilled at rhythm, that's not my experience as a facilitator. Everybody has a heartbeat, so we are much more skilled than we might think we are. So we provide all the drums. We have almost 100 drums. We set up a circle of chairs, maybe in concentric circles if it's a larger group, and we put a drum at every chair, and then I lead people in an experience of the drum circle. So it's very beginner friendly. We provide the drums, so all people have to do is just show up, and it's a tremendous community builder. People feel so great and connected after the experience.
Do you have a monetary goal that you're aiming to raise?
Yes. At the moment, we are looking at $100,000 by the end of the tour.
How far along are you on that goal?
We're at about $35,000. Now, this is a first time out. So what we expect to happen is that once we get to the Okanagan, and then, of course, the final leg, Hope to Vancouver, that amount will be reached and surpassed.
Can you tell me where your drum circle will be happening and when you plan to be going through Burns Lake, and lastly, how people can support you?
Oh, lovely. Okay, so Burns Lake is on Tuesday the 17th, and we will be at the Lake District Secondary School at 6:30 to 8:30. In terms of support, the greatest support is to come out and experience the drum circle, right? I think, of course, we're looking for donations as this fundraiser for BC Children's Hospital sort of rolls through the province. And yes, just to pass the word would be fantastic.
Do you have a website or a page that people can go to something online that people can find a little more information about you or maybe follow your journey?
For sure. Yes. So the website is drumrun.org. Now, for any media outlets, we send people to drumrun.org/media.
Okay. Excellent. Well, good luck on the rest of this tour, and you sound pretty upbeat. I spoke to someone who was doing a marathon a little while ago, and he was exhausted when I spoke to him. He was doing a fundraising marathon, and it's nice to hear you sounding so upbeat.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I do have my moments, because like many sort of adventure, you know, endeavors, this is more like an odyssey for me. It's super inspiring. It's super challenging at times, right? Mm-hmm. Today will be 35 kilometers in the rain, you know, and I just conquered the Hungry Hill. So that was quite an achievement.
Yeah, we're familiar with it. I mean, I've never even biked up Hungry Hill. I just look at it in my car and feel tired.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm so inspired by this cause. And when you have an opportunity to work with kids that, you know, are sometimes, you know, saddled with, you know, incredibly devastating conditions, and they demonstrate even at a young age such amazing resiliency, I just go, you know what, I can run 35 kilometers, right, and facilitate drum circles.
Yeah.
So that really inspires me. So and we have a great team working with us as
Yeah.
For the team.
There's some of that unbiased team support there.
That's right.
Okay. But, well, Lyle and Errol, thank you so much for giving me the time and speaking to me today about your cause.
Oh, it's so fun, and so happy to check in with you.
Great. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.